By the light of the stars, I was hunting again for a mean old troll in a third-level den. I'd been lucky so far, this was old-school rules. I should have been cautious, should have used my tools. The path was leafy and the way was dim. The DM cracked a smile, but I ignored him. And then I fell into a spike pit.
Howdy doody, I'm Colin Green, and you are listening to Spike Pit, episode 110. Ringing the changes today, we had Logan Howard's crazy Spike Pit theme opening the show. My thanks to Logan for providing that. Tagged it on the end of last episode, and I thought I'd put it on the front this time, and who knows where it'll crop up next. Anyway, Logan is the creator of Swordbreaker Zine and Podcast, as well as the co-presenter of the Monster Brothers podcast with Ray Otis. If you have not listened to those podcasts, I urge you to do so forthwith, because you are denying yourselves the wondrous imaginations of those guys. Got me thinking about Dungeon World between them. And I'm in the process of rereading it. But there is some other stuff I'm interested in at the moment also.
Hey Colin, it's Rob from Down in the Heap. Wow, what an episode. You got Bing, Ba-ba-ba-boo, Turfler calling in. You got Logan Howard doing a song. You got Hobbs. Che Webster, it was a great episode. Frank asked a really interesting question about the basic thing. And one thing I consider is it was kind of just a marketing angle to call it basic, to try and, you know, get more kids into the hobby. But also back in old school, like Avalon Hill war games, they usually had a basic game and an advanced game that would add more rules to it. So you had kind of the basic learning game, and then advanced would add a lot of extra doodads and stuff. And, oh, looks like I'm going to go Jackson here. Hey, Colin, it's Rob from the Heap again calling back. Regarding alignment, I have gotten to the point where I don't really even consider it much with the player characters. I use it more for the NPCs and the monsters to use as a kind of a guideline for their general disposition and ethics. And as far as the back and forth that you and Che had as with the mechanics of the game, at least in BX, things like Detect Evil and Protection from Evil were written more from a relativistic point of view, where you detected evil intent, as in something that had had it out for you. And Protection from Evil spell would ward you against just creatures of a different alignment. So that's a little bit trickier, but not so hard to apply in the game. So there you go. Thanks. Bye.
Hey, Colin. Tim Shorts from Gothridge Manor. I like the exchange between you and Che. Alignment is kind of an interesting topic. Philosophically, gaming-wise, you know, don't use it too much. But I might do an episode on that. So thank you for the idea. And good to you on bringing up the topic, and Che from and making it very interesting.
So we heard from Rob C. of Down in a Heap there, doing a Matt Jackson, followed up with Tim from Gothridge Manor. Now, both of them talking about alignment. But before I get to that, Rob was talking about Frank T's question in the previous episode, and yeah, it was a really good point that you raised about this idea of basic and advanced, among other things. And I'm not sure my reply really did it justice. I think because I don't feel super qualified to talk too much about it, as I said in the previous episode. But the point that Rob brings up, the wargaming roots, once again, as they do time and time again, really show up in Dungeons and Dragons. Most folks listening are probably aware of the link with chainmail and Gary Gygax and the guys from back in the 70s and before that were really into their wargaming, their sand tables and historical miniatures, all that sort of thing. And it came across into the fantasy realm with early Dungeons and Dragons. And as the games come along, I think it's got further and further away from its wargame roots. But when you look back at some of these older games, especially if you've played war games, you can see the lineage. And yeah, it didn't even occur to me. You know, you've got the likes of Squad Leader and Advanced Squad Leader, and countless other war games. Even within one rule set, you'll have the basic rules and then the advanced rules. So yeah, good point there, Rob. You also talked about alignment, and I was thinking about this in my exchange with Shay, this idea of absolutist and relativist, and I think my thinking on alignment was refocused a little bit when I looked at the spells. In fact, not that long ago, when it was brought to my attention that it was detect evil and things like that were not actually necessarily about alignment, but as Rob was saying, it was the intent. And you know, that is a bit more relativist. So you could get a perfectly good person intending to kill somebody for maybe questionable reasons, or in a moment of madness, and perhaps you would want to rule that the evil intent was there, so perhaps a spell would at that point trigger. Well, there's no perhaps about it. If you've ruled that there was evil intent, if you're going with the description in the rules, then boom, you're going to detect it. So that was a good point, and it just made me think that in terms of my thinking, that relativist sort of idea is pretty new in my gaming experience. It actually came up in the last game we was playing, Basic Fantasy, that doesn't use alignment as a rule. You've got good and evil, but you know, it's up to the players and the DM to work out what that looks like. And it was just talking about humanoids in the last session, and I don't really want that kind of campaign world where just because something, a creature is a goblin, that they're necessarily rotten to the core, out to kill everything, you know, stuff like that. So I do want to have some more shades of grey in my campaign. But clearly there are going to be opposite ends of the spectrum for me, because I think that's kind of easier to get a handle on. If everything is really, really shades of grey and it all sort of comes around, it can be, I think that could get complex and messy. And to your other point, Rob, yeah, I'm glad you enjoyed the episode. It was quite funny. It was like a musical episode. yeah, awesome. Speaking of awesome, if Tim was to put out a Gothridge Manor episode on alignment, that would in fact also be awesome. So I look forward to that too. Thanks for calling in, guys.
Hey, Spike Pitt. It's Vance. Happy Monday. Hey, it's good to meet you and game with you this weekend. Matt's enthusiasm for Black Hack is infectious. And yeah, liking the system. I think, like you said, everything is, you know, the stats mean something and everything's just kind of laid out there. No saves, no skills, no proficiencies. Just roll with your stat numbers. Anyway, hope you're having a great week, and keep at it, man. Talk to you later. Okay, bye.
And you know what happens if you mention his name 3 times? He pops up. But that's Vance's fault. Thanks for calling in, Vance, but you have invoked the Jackson. He has released another episode over on his podcast, Matt Random. And he's talking about this very game. Played in the game the weekend, as Vance was saying, the Black Hack. Now, I've mentioned this to Matt. I've mentioned it on MeWe, but his enthusiasm for the Black Hack has spilt over to me. I was familiar to a certain extent with the first Black Hack, but I picked up Black Hack 2 a while back. I finally got around to reading it. Everyone was talking about it on the Audio Dungeon, and I decided, I don't know, I think it was about a week ago, that I'd actually stop what I was reading and get the Black Hack out and go back through it. And it was actually quite different to how I thought it was. My memory of it was faulty. And, wow, I really enjoyed it, as I did the session on Sunday with Matt. Really great fun session. I didn't know who was playing. He just posted an Audio Dungeon that he was running a quick game, who was interested. I threw my name in the hat. He said, oh, we've got two players. Didn't hear any more until I turned up to play. Turns out, Vance was there, myself, Shane Ward, who I haven't gamed with before, Matt himself, and a guy that everybody was calling Alex. I think his name might have been Alexi or something like that. Or anyway, didn't know that guy. Unfortunately, he got sort of called away during the session and didn't get a chance to say cheerio or really find out much about him. But hopefully catch up with Alex next time round. Anyways, great fun session. If you listen to Matt's episode that he's just put out, his latest podcast, he's talking about getting capturing that OSR more grim and gritty feel in the adventure that he's currently running with us guys. And I think he definitely did that. We was kind of creeping around. I tend to play these games quite cautiously. I think we managed to save Shane's character, Jax the Thief, on a couple of occasions, or definitely on at least one occasion. And we was proceeding quite cautiously in that old school way. We had a little bit of combat, we had some traps, there was a little bit of a mystery, almost like a whodunit kind of thing going on, and there's a decent little bit of role playing and everything. So it had all the ingredients to make a great session. We had a laugh and a joke without it going stupid crazy kind of thing. I like my games to be quite light-hearted, but I'm not massive into the big gonzo stuff, so it was perfect for me. We played it on Hangouts and used real dice. And like I said to Matt and the guys, you know, that's pretty much how I roll, pardoning the pun. And for me, that's my best chance. If I'm ever going to get to do some running some games online, I've said this before, but I think that's the way, that's the probably the only way I'm going to be able to achieve it. I'm chipping away at Roll20, don't get me wrong. I'm making effort in that direction. I've put some of Mike Shea's stuff on my Roll20 account. I've set up a game and I'm just kind of like getting my head around the maps and stuff. But for me, it does have its problems. As you know, Arfed's a big fan and he can seem to pull it off. But it just slows things down a little bit to my mind. I enjoy the games I play, but say like with Jason in Kalmata, he always uses Roll20, but he's super slick at it. He's spent hours on Roll20 at this point, and he's just got that down. So there's none of that real hanging about. Every now and then a random encounter might take it like a little while just to size up a token or everything. But sometimes you feel like the GM is somewhat absent because they're having to work the buttons and levers. But no big problem. Like I say, I really enjoy it. And it does make things super clear, especially for people that struggle to visualise things a little bit. So, well, pros and cons and horses for courses and all that. I'll probably talk about the Black Hack a little bit more in future when I've had a few more games. It's something I definitely want to get back to. Really enjoyable session, and hopefully the stars will align and I'll be able to play next time the guys reconvene. We played on the Sunday morning slot, and it was Sunday morning, or was it Saturday morning? Oh, no, it was Sunday morning, that's right. And yeah, it was brilliant and really good to meet you guys. And of course, thanks to Matt, the hostess with the mostess. Round and round we go. Where we stop, don't nobody know. It's game night tonight, folks, and I want to talk a little bit about prep. Now, when I talk about prep, that means basically one thing. That means I'm going to be talking about Sly Flourish and the Lazy Dungeon Master, or more accurately, Return of the Lazy Dungeon Master. I think it's quite fair to say that Mike's work and his blog, slyflourish.com, has probably been one of the biggest influences on me since my return to running games. I picked up the original Lazy Dungeon Master, thoroughly enjoyed it, found it a real eye-opener, and his latest offering I backed as a Kickstarter, one of the very few Kickstarters that I've ever done. And it does not disappoint me. I'm not going to go through the book just now. I'm just going to say there's a few key points that I always use. First up, I've got like a summary sheet that I use that's got the players' characters in summary. I'll be having a little look through that, checking up on my notes before the session. So, refamiliarise myself with the names. I mean, they haven't really got any abilities, but just, you know, the composition of the party, just get that in my mind. Between sessions, I'm thinking about secrets and clues. This is the spice that is sprinkled through the session. Just little snippets of perhaps campaign world or narrative stuff, possibly developing the background of the characters a little bit. And some of these secrets and clues I might use in my post-game texts to players. If something comes up in the session that I don't think all the characters would pick up on, I might save that till after the session and then fire it on a text. But Mike stresses the fact that you don't want a whole bunch of these things piling up. So you kind of, the ones that don't come into existence or are undiscovered, you just leave them to one side and maybe forget about them. And if you remember them, bring them up in a future session. But don't try and keep a log of all these things. And the third thing that I do is think about the start, get the start of the session off to a flying start, a strong start. That could be, you know, bashing into a combat or a reveal or some sort of cutscene or anything you like. But as Mike says, this is the only part of the session that you've actually truly got some sort of control over. And depending on how you look at that, even that could be limited. But it's your best chance to get things rolling. And I think with a good start, that's probably the single most biggest thing that gives me the confidence to run the game. If I know I've got a good start, I've got some secrets and clues, and I've familiarized with myself with the characters and what they're about. For me, that's the big three, or the Holy Trinity, if you like. And we all know three is the magic number. I really think these techniques are strong, and seemingly I'm not the only person. Well, I never was going to be, was I? But just in the podcasts I listen to, I've heard three different people mentioning Sly Flourish and the Lazy DM technique. We've had Sean from Gaming and BS talking about it. He hasn't said much about it. He's just kind of passing mention of it. For a little bit more detailed discussion about it, perhaps going forward, you're going to hear more from Shay Webster on his episodes where he talks about his GMing technique. I forget what he calls them now, but they're really good, and he's kind of pulling back from the heavy prep a little bit, and he's trying to run a bit of a lighter prep game, and maybe changing his focus and technique for preparation, and is using some of Sly Flourish's technique. So it'd be interesting to hear how that goes. And then thirdly, this is more campaign related, but I heard Kevin, the Dungeon Muser, talking about spiral campaigns. Regular listeners will know that I like to world build by starting in a small place. It's fairly classic. I think I got this idea from back in the day playing Mensa Expert, starting in a town called Threshold. And as you got more familiar with the D&D rules and characters got a little bit higher in level, they would foray out into the wilderness. Threshold was in the Grand Duchy of Karimikos, and it was the classic start point. In the expert book, it had some details. There's a nice little map in there. And if I'm honest, the map of Threshold and the surrounding environs is very similar to the basic fantasy Morgansfort map. In fact, I would kind of think of Morgansfort as it's basically like a mashup of Threshold and Keep on the Borderlands. So, yeah, that is interesting to me. and the basic fantasy books do come in for a little bit of flack with regards to being kind of derivative. But I'm fine with that. And they're serving me well. Before I go, I would like to give a shout out to Glyn Seal, Monkey Blood Designs. He's going to be launching his Kickstarter, I believe, at the end of this week. So round about the 15th or 16th. I don't think that's been finalised, so don't quote me on it. But the next book in the Middleland series, it's Great London. Now, if you listen back, I did an episode with a bit of a preview talking about some of the artwork. I did some would say, somewhat dramatic reading from the blurb off the back of the book. And I'm really looking forward to this. I'll be backing it myself. And I noticed that John Large from Red Dice Diaries, he is going to be one of the Kickstarter authors. So if the Kickstarter goes well, one of the stretch goals, I'm guessing, is going to involve some contribution from John at Red Dice Diaries, whose game I play in on a Friday every other week. We missed this week's session, it was cancelled, but I'm looking forward to picking up where we left off with my character Silas. And I think it would appear that the end of the world is nigh in that campaign. So, yeah, thanks for running that for us, John. And hope this Kickstarter goes well for yourself and Glyn. I'm sure it will. The Middlelands is great. And everything that Glyn touches seems to come out marvellous looking, spot on. Thanks everyone who's called in. Thanks again to Matt for letting us play in his black hat game, and thanks to you, the listener, for giving a little bit of time to one side for Old Spike Pit. Take care, I'll catch you later.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.